You are listening to Your Pod and Your Staff, the podcast of College Life Christian Fellowship at UC Davis. I am Peter Nittler, the college pastor of First Baptist Church in Davis, California. And our mission is to shape college-age people from all spiritual starting points into complete and equipped agents of King Jesus. And on this podcast, we want to have conversations that will accompany our Tuesday night Zoom gatherings, and we hope that they form you, encourage you, maybe even make you laugh, and that they would be a source of King Jesus guiding you through this time. And we are now in our second week of a three-part mini-series on relationships. And like we said last week, this is a different way of having this conversation for us. We are wading into the waters of relational wisdom by listening to how different couples have navigated these waters. And I'll say it again, that our goal is not necessarily to come up with hard and fast rules for how to date, but just to amass data of how it has worked for people, which will hopefully make it a little bit easier to see how it can work in the future. And if you generally like people, if you generally like having fun, if you generally like anything that this podcast tends to be about, it's impossible for you not to love this episode. I have some of my dearest friends, Brant and Onda Robinson, on the podcast today. And not only are they just delightful to talk to and I suspect listen to, but their story really pushes our conversation forward. This is a couple of whom we can legitimately ask the question, why are you even married? Why didn't you break up? Like, this is a couple who talks about things not being easy. This is a couple who talk very candidly about things in their relationship not always being healthy, and yet here they are, a thriving marriage. How does that make sense? What do we do with that? And that, my friends, is the beauty and complexity of this kind of conversation and this topic. So just a word about my audio in this episode. So at the church, I was recording and some garden maintenance was being done. So you might be able to hear some garden equipment in the background. So if you do hear a hum, you are not going crazy. Just forgive me. So let's get to it. If you don't know Brant and Onda, you will be glad to digitally meet them. And if you do know them, you're already excited to listen. So please enjoy the podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Your Pod and Your Staff. This is a very exciting episode for me. This is the second week of our little relationship stories, little series that we're doing, and I woke up pretty excited about this one. So I am with really two of my best friends, Brant and Onda Robinson, who are in their house in Sacramento. Hello to you, Brant and Onda.
Hello!
Hey, Pete.
We're so excited.
You can hear it. You can hear it already. Look how fun they are. They're so fun. Okay, so I was driving in this morning and I was sort of thinking about, like, what do I say about Brant and Onda to sort of set the table, set the stage for this conversation? And the first thing is, one of the hard parts about living in a college town, I think you probably both realize this, is that, like, people just come and go.
Yes.
Right? Like, there's a pretty big open door and a pretty big back door to communities. Agreed. And I think that you two are probably, if you make a little graph and on the x-axis, it's like time I've known you. And on the y-axis is like, what would be on the y-axis? On the y-axis is
like depth of relationship.
Closeness.
Yeah.
Right. Depth of relationship. Like you are the furthest right, high and right, right? You know what I mean? Like you are the people that I've known the longest since I've been here and to whom I feel sort of the closest and who has sort of been there with us and with me throughout most of my time.
There's a lot of sweetness there. And I think we were, I was talking with Katie, your sweet wife, and we were talking about how we've known each other for over a decade. So much time, so much life together, graduating college, marriage, houses, babies, all of that.
Right. But it's also like we were sort of deeply connected through this whole thing. You know, it's not just like, oh, the Robinsons have been there, you know, but it's like, you know, Brant and I were roommates for 2 years, sleeping in the same room, pillow talk every single night where,
good old pillow talk.
Brant loves that pillow talk.
Dude, I remember, riding on your car when you guys were leaving your wedding, you know, you mess up the car. And I remember writing something like, Onda, I'm passing the pillow talk duties over to you or something like that.
I know. And poor Brant, because I just like to go straight to sleep. So he definitely misses the Peter pillow talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, like, my voice puts Onda to sleep.
His voice is so soothing. Like, I just want to go to sleep.
And so I talk for a little bit and I look over and she's passed out.
And Brant does have a knack for like taking a pause when he's like sort of thinking of something to say, you know? And so I can imagine in that pause, finding some snoozes. You know,
they're not that long pauses.
No, but I'm saying just in a pause if you're already dozing off.
Yeah, but that does speak to the depth of relationship too, right? You were in our wedding, like you were very much.
That's true.
You've been very much a part of our life, so I'm excited to get to chat and be here. It's such a privilege.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've signed on for this little duty, and just to think a little bit more just about the Brant and Peter roommate relationship. Brant, I think you were the first person who I ever saw, and this really changed my life, do the sort of half shower in the morning where you don't shower, but you put your head under the sink for a little bit, and then then you call it clean, and you go about your day. It really it gives you the emotional satisfaction of showering without all the time. It's wonderful. Yeah. You still do that?
Yes.
Yes, but I never considered it a shower. I don't consider myself clean after doing that.
That's true.
I would shower in the evening, and in the morning it would just be to do my hair.
Okay. Fair enough. Then me as your disciple twisted it and corrupted it into a half shower, and that will be my shower as opposed to doing a shower.
All right.
Thank you for introducing that to me. And Anda, I still remember, I feel like I remember the second that I met you. And I feel like it was at FBC and you were coming over to greet Brant. And it's not a remarkable story or anything, but I remember that I did the thing that I do with people who have a sort of unusual name.
Oh, no.
And I ask them to spell it. And I would like to know from you now, is that rude?
No. In fact, generally, I end up having to spell my name for people because when I say Anda, generally people say, one, that's unusual, or they say, what?
Yeah. Excuse me, what? Yeah.
They're like, what is it?
What did that lady say that we just met in the neighborhood? We just met a new person in our neighborhood the other day, and it was like the mom of one of our neighbors, and she's like, oh, that's exotic.
Oh, yeah. That's exotic. Oh.
And she repeated that multiple times.
Oh, my. That's exotic.
Her name is exotic.
And then how did you spell that? Like, it's A-N-D-A. Yeah. So everyone listening, it's A-N-D-A. But generally, I get like Wanda or Rhonda. I recently had someone type out Ananda. Like, that's I just didn't know that that was a name. Maybe it is. It might be.
Maybe it is. Hey, no one knows that Anda's a name.
Anda's a name. So, nope, not rude. That's totally okay.
And speaking of names, though, you, I think, not to be rude to the surname of Robinson, but I think your going from Fox to Robinson was a hit.
I did.
That was a.
It was a big hit. It was a great thing.
It was very rough to lose my last name of Fox. Although I will say, while I do miss it, I teach middle school. And having Fox as the last name, I feel like it created less conflict changing that for middle school.
That's true.
So
yeah, Katie took a hit going from DeSantis to Nittler. You know, she teaches World War II sometimes, and the rhyming of Nittler and Hitler is not great, you know. But she still loves me anyway. So, one thing I was thinking about is that you two were sort of one of the first relationships, and really the relationship that I saw the most of, you know, and sort of got to experience. And I was 2 years younger than you, and so I think I was just pretty impressionable, and I think I just always liked your relationship. Like, I loved when Anda, you came over, you know. I really, like, when I saw your car when I was pulling up, I was like, oh, Anda's here. That's awesome, you know. And I just remember you guys making each other laugh a lot and seeming like you enjoyed being together. And it was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brant has a great laugh.
He does. That was, like, one of the first things that caught my attention.
Yeah.
And he laughs at everything.
Yeah, like, he does. Everything.
Okay. You will think you are the most hilarious person in the world around Brant because he will just make you feel like you are so funny and, like, so interesting because he just laughs at everything. It's the best.
I totally agree. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Brant. Laugh at something. Think of something funny.
I'm just going to laugh. Yeah.
It'll happen. Okay.
You'll hear it at some point.
Yeah, we'll hear it throughout.
Oh, how about I tell this story? Because we missed this when because you said how you remember meeting me, but I didn't get to tell, like, my first memory of Peter.
Yeah,
like, my first, like, story memory of Peter. So Peter and I, we met at church, and he's, like, as everybody knows, one of like the most gregarious, like easy to talk to people. But like one of my first memories of Peter was we were in this intramural softball league. And I am like the absolute worst softball player of all time. And okay, let me say this. I'm sure let's do some growth mindset here, okay? I'm sure that if I practiced, it would be better. But I just it's just not there.
Yeah, you were new.
I was new. I was just not there. Yeah. We were in like this league with some of our friends who had played softball in their previous life, and I just was like the weakest link on the team, 100% the weakest link. And dearest
good attitude,
Peter,
though. Real good attitude. Yeah,
was the most encouraging person in the world, but also like very much. Not sugarcoating the fact that like I was the weakest on the team.
And yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. You are.
Like, oh man, yeah. I'm so bad. He's like, yeah, you're not very good. Like, you're just not good. And I just was like, this guy is hilarious. And yeah, I just remember. I remember Peter just very sweetly being like, you're not good at this softball.
Yeah, yeah. Onda, I'm not gonna lie to you. You bad.
I was really bad. Yeah, it's probably something just like that. Oh man. That was good stuff.
Gosh, that was that was funny. That was like right when I was knowing and learning college life. Like that was right after spring retreat, I think, and right when I was sort of getting into the community.
Yeah, and spring retreat was the time where I think a lot of people remember you because you stood up in the middle of like, do you remember this?
I do.
In the time of sharing.
And like you shared this like most beautiful story. And it was so heartfelt. And everyone was like, whoa, Peter. And then it was like, you were there.
Who is this guy?
Do you remember though? Because
that was my
Mark
first memory
of Peter. Yeah. Mark Bjerke and Nathan Ely and Andy Blaylock would always make fun of me for like years after because I was like thanking people, you know, and then I started to thank inanimate objects or like inanimate things. I'd also like to thank the car ride for providing an opportunity for me to, you know, get used to the setting. I'd like to thank the retreat, and they always made fun of me for that. So
yeah, that's amazing.
But I'm glad that it lived in less infamy and more nice memory for you.
Oh,
for
yeah,
you
guys. Totally. Definitely. I don't remember you thinking inanimate objects, if that helps.
Yeah.
No.
But okay, so also let me say this. Another reason why I'm excited to talk to you guys this morning and have really enjoyed your relationship is that you two, I think, are sort of the this is a crass way to put it, like happiest relationship of people who are pretty different. You know? So even last night, we're all in a Bible study together. And mm-hmm. last night, I like to get the Bible study rolling, I asked a question that was, if you had to be described as one of these two things, would you rather be described as boring or irresponsible? And I think every other couple was the same. Like Katie and I both said we'd rather be described as irresponsible than boring. Like being boring would be like the worst, right? And Mike and Pearl both said irresponsible. Steph and Chris both said irresponsible. And you two were the only ones that were split.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
That seems pretty accurate.
Yeah. And so I feel like it'll be helpful to hear from a couple, from people who dated and people who are married, who are different. You could probably tell me a little bit more about how you're different, but you know, it is clear that you guys are different, that you balance each other well, that you don't always approach situations the same. You know, you just have differences, you know. And I think that'll be really fun to hear all about. So anyway, I'm sure that will come up in some of the stuff we talk about. But I want to sort of remind us all and paint the picture again of what we're doing. We're sort of trying to get wisdom about relationships from sort of lived experience and from the stories of people. And so you two are not responsible to tell us what is true about relationships, what is true about dating. You're responsible to tell us sort of how it went for you and what was true for you. And the hope that I have is that, you know, this thing is so complicated and this thing can be so gray and there's a million ways to do this well, even within the same sort of guardrails, that I love to just create a bunch of different stories and put data on the wall to show, you know, there's a bunch of different ways that these stories can go. And mm-hmm. And again, last week I put it in the context of, you know, if you look online, how to smoke a pork butt, there's a million different ways for people to tell you how to do it. You know, you wrap it at a different time, you put a different rub on it. But at the end of the day, you want delicious pulled pork, and there's a lot of ways to end up with that. So anyway, that's what you're responsible for. And thank you for lending us your time and opening up your story to us. And so can we just get started with how did you get together? What was the start of your story?
We initially ended up meeting the first time through Peter and I's mutual roommate at the time. We didn't know Peter at the time.
But that you were eventually.
We eventually were roommates.
Eventual roommate.
Christian Guth was, I guess, my roommate at the time and also involved in college life.
A friend of mine.
Was also a friend of Onda's. And Onda was a RA in the dorms.
Oh, yeah.
And
Tercero. And
ooh, Tercero.
I was a Tercero. Was it, and, you know, I was in a building that no longer exists.
Oh, yeah. You were in the letter buildings,
I
weren't
was,
you?
Well, that's what that was my undergrad. Like, my undergrad, as if I wasn't an undergrad as an RA. Yeah.
That freshman
was my
year?
First year. My second year, I was in Leach. Do you remember those?
That, I do remember
like,
Leach,
that
yeah.
outdoor dorming. Anyway, it no longer exists. Yeah.
Leach was the pits. Leach was just the bottom of the barrel of what you wanted.
It was very hard to be an RA in Leach because it was easier to keep to yourself. So trying to bring people together. It was an adventure for sure. But we, as an RA, you get like a lot of meals. And so one of my dearest friends, Emily and I, we were RAs both in Tercero. And so we invited Christian, his friend Matt, and his friend Gabe, like to all come and just enjoy a meal with us. And
so both of my roommates, Gabe was also my roommate at the time. So,
and was Matt Pye?
And yeah. Matt Pye, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we invited them to come. And so they brought Brant with them. And I remember thinking, like, it was just, like, expecting me to, like, give a meal to this, like, person I don't even know at all.
That's true. Presumptuous.
And then come to find out.
So my thought process in joining was, so I was on the men's swim team at the time and had my own swipes to get into the DC because it was just the easiest thing to do after swim practice to just bike over to one of the DCs and eat dinner afterwards.
Yeah, the DC
and so
rules.
I had my own swipes at the time. So my thinking was, because I don't know these people, if they don't swipe me in, I have my own swipes and I can still get in
just,
and
like,
join them.
Not going to swipe them in and be like, good luck. We'll see you on the other side. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, sorry, you can't come in. Like, no. So we swipe this guy in and then I don't find out until like years later that he's like, oh, I actually like could have swiped myself in. Cool, 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 man. That's super cool. But I
yeah, real cool move.
Awesome. Cool, cool, cool. Very, very nice. But I remember Brant tends to be, although I feel like maybe not as much now, although still a little bit, tends to be like a little bit more on the quiet side and mm-hmm. very much like an observer. And so
yes.
he then and even like up into our dating relationship, I feel like it was like a goal of mine because I tend to be more like talkative, more like I'm very. More of the extrovert. He's definitely more of the introvert.
There you go. Differences.
Yeah. Like so many differences. It was like my goal to get him to speak.
Talk.
I'm like, I want this guy to talk. Like, I'm going to make him talk.
And you're talking at that meal?
Yeah, at the meal. And then, so I like asked him a lot of questions. I remember his laugh again. That was like the first thing that like kind of stuck out to me. So that was like our initial, like the very, very first time we like saw each other. That's the very first time. When we got together.
In person.
oh yeah. Tell him that story.
Because I did see photos of her online on Facebook from one of the freshman year retreats that Christian went on. Like I was just perusing his photos on Facebook and saw Onda and thought, oh, she's cute.
Isn't that so funny? Like before we even met, oh, it's like such a like fairy tale.
So she was just random person you
she
saw?
She was just a random person. No idea who
you
she
had
was.
No idea. Was. You had no idea to look for Onda. It was just...
Yeah, I was just looking through pictures and came across group photos, and she was in many of them, and I was like, oh, she's really cute.
Look at that.
I know.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that so funny? Yeah. It cracks me up. I didn't know that until way later either. So we got together our junior... It was like just leading into our junior year of college. And Brant and Christian had started coming to college life, like coming around college life more frequently. And so we sort of had just kind of seen each other, had some run-ins through different events. And then at it was like the freshman barbecue or something. We were there.
Welcome barbecue.
And he asked for my phone number somehow. I don't remember exactly. Do you remember how?
Yeah. It was sort of indirectly.
It was like kind of indirectly trying to be smooth. I don't remember exactly. Like, obviously, it was like.
Oh, I would love for you to remember.
I'd love to remember also.
So I gave him my phone number.
She gave me a phone number.
Okay. Okay, wow, juicy. Let's see where this goes.
And that weekend, she was driving up to Oregon to visit her brother, who was on the Oregon U of O football team, and they had a game against USC that weekend. So she and a couple of her friends drove up there, and I was trying to text her, and she wasn't responding. So I think at some point I either called the number and realized it was a landline or a fax line that she gave me.
Oh, my God.
And the thing was, is that I had her look at the phone number I typed in to my phone and had her confirm it. Yes. I showed it to her. She said yes.
Uh-huh. Was this foolishness or evasiveness?
She just was totally oblivious.
Oh gosh, that is hilarious. I did not mean to do that at all. I don't know. I checked it. I don't know. I just didn't.
Yeah, but she gave me the wrong number.
Poor Brant's over here putting his heart on the line, asking for a phone number, mm-hmm. making the first text, being all vulnerable, and just gets denied. Good grief.
And then the kicker to the story is that in order to get the correct phone number, unbeknownst to me, I ask her ex-boyfriend for the correct number.
Wait, so her ex-boyfriend just happened to be the first person you'd think to...
He was, for some reason, he was in close proximity to me at the time. Like, we were out on the quad.
So you didn't know that they had dated?
I did not know that they had dated.
Isn't that so uncomfortable?
So very, very uncomfortable. So exceedingly uncomfortable.
But it wasn't uncomfortable to me at the time because I didn't know.
Right. Right. Ignorance is bliss. Yeah.
Yes.
It's not that. I mean, it had been like much time passed between.
Right. Right. Not a sob story.
He was already dating somebody else at the time.
Hilarious.
So,
that like that. Right.
It wasn't. Yeah. Anything.
So that was
weird,
like our initial. So then we just did like a lot of the whole texting back and forth. We would, you know, study together. We started running kind of in the same circles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the first move he ever like made was, Peter, were you there for this? We were.
No, I don't, but I feel like I was if I know what story you're going to tell.
Okay. So Davis does Movies in the Park.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like I was there.
Okay.
And October.
Like just a bunch of friends all went and watched the movie Madagascar. And there's a part, if you've seen Madagascar, where the lion really wants to, like, eat meat. And so he doesn't want to, like, eat his friends, which sounds, like, kind of morbid when you, like, explain it out loud. But
It's tough to explain it out loud.
Yeah. So he's, like, barricading himself so that he doesn't, like, you know.
Eat one of his friends.
Which, like, again, when you say it out loud, it just sounds like so. So Brant turns to me. He's like sitting near me.
I wouldn't say I turned to her. We were sitting next to each other.
I turned to her.
She was laying on her stomach facing forward towards the screen. I was sitting on my butt, leaning backwards, watching the movie.
And he puts his hand on my back and he's like, don't be scared. Just like, for Madagascar.
Preference.
Don't be scared.
to preface that, there was some reason, which I for the life of me can't remember now.
He claims
that was in my mind
a good idea or a smooth move to say.
Yeah.
Super smooth. Yeah.
That there was something we had previously talked about that made that a logical thing to do in my mind.
Like Onda had mentioned, I fear dancing little monkey lemur things.
I don't know. I wish I could remember why that was, but
so
I can't.
So he like puts his hand on my back and he starts like rubbing my back. And I was like, what is happening? And I remember I was with one of my, to this day, like one of my dearest friends, Stephanie. We were roommates at the time and we were walking back to the car and I was like, Steph, did you see that? And
no,
she's like,
scared.
I didn't see. Yeah. And she's like, do you like him? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe. I need to like sort out my feelings.
Oh,
so that was the initial move. And then after that, it sort of just kind of came together. We like watched movies and he held my hand. I know.
Nice.
He held my hand. Yeah. I was like, where? And I.
But I held her hand before we had a DTR.
as they say. Okay.
Which I didn't know what that acronym was at the time. Define the relationship. Talk.
Right.
And
he's so cool. He didn't know.
So you are a little hand-holding couple before you are a real couple.
But I
you were not a hand-holding couple because
we were. But then I told him, listen, but like a little bit nicer of a tone. I didn't say that like that. I wasn't like, hey,
it was kind of like that.
Listen, what's happening? Yeah. I'm just not a non-committal handholder.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Verbatim.
Those are.
I'm not a non-committal handholder.
You're and giving so then, our people language. Yeah.
But then this is like another example of like our differences is I just need you to be like very clear.
Verbally clear.
Verbally clear. Like I
she needed the verbal confirmation of Brandt, what was going on.
Brandt is like I not felt, like that.
I felt my actions
were very clear.
Were very clear and spoke louder than my words could ever be.
And so he in some like form was like, well, isn't it just clear? No.
It's like, what are you talking
I
about?
I just need you to say it with your words.
Yeah. Onda, I couldn't, I'm in violent agreement with you. Yeah. Yeah. I just needs to be spoken. It needs to exist in words in the air.
Yeah. It's and so great. Then after that conversation, we got together.
Yeah. And then and then you were freed to.
And then he was free to hold my hand. Hold your hand. Wanted yeah. to.
That's not true.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know.
We great. Could this not hold spicy. Hands in public.
Oh, yeah. That's like a whole nother
And this
thing.
Is a whole slew we of another part of our relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm down. I kind of want to know the three of us, you know, have been talking ever since I asked you to do this. And you were mentioned that you sort of felt like your relationship was, your words, like unhealthy.
Yeah.
And and so I'd love to dive into some of that. Like, what were some of the features that you thought were unhealthy? Tell me about it. Tell me what made it unhealthy.
Yeah. You know, for people who are listening, when Peter asked us to be guests on the podcast.
Guest celebrities.
Yeah. Wow. I told him, I said, you know, I don't, like, the beginning of our relationship was kind of unhealthy. Like, I don't know if we're the best candidates for this. Because it was pretty unhealthy when we first started. Mm-hmm. And
I'm really curious, just so you know, like, there's this little bit of me that's like, is this just hindsight? Like, you're obviously more mature now.
Sure.
Looking back then, it's like you were less mature then. So it's like, are you just seeing what was immaturity or like relative immaturity and calling it unhealthy just because you feel healthier now? Or was it really unhealthy? So I'm just really curious to like dive into this together. So anyway.
No, that's super. That's a really interesting perspective. Perhaps. Yeah. I'm sure part of it is immaturity. We fought all the time. You know how like most relationships start like very blissfully and like there's never any fighting and then like fighting happens later. We were like pretty much the reverse. So we
we had very different expectations what a relationship looks like.
Very different. Yeah. Personalities, very different, like what we felt like we needed. Mm-hmm. I was very independent, like so independent.
Very. Emphasis on the very.
Very. If that was written down, I'd bold it and italicize it.
Underline it, highlight.
And she would tell me frequently how independent of a woman she was.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Things change so much when you get married. But yeah, I felt like very independent. Like I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And I just didn't understand like why he would get upset if I didn't tell him that I was planning on hanging out with somebody. I mean, it was just like a lot of, and then his expectations
was much more couple-y and spending all of our time together and having some sort of emotional support. And I think that came from just my own insecurities at the time and somewhat feelings of inadequacy, which partly stemmed from my recent transition of being a collegiate swimmer to not. So I only swam my first 2 years in college and then decided to take a year off to try to keep my grades up to where they needed to be. And in doing so, I just had the sort of identity crisis, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And so I think some of that then was put on me.
Her, yeah.
that like he was sort of in this transition phase of kind of finding his identity and also needing to feel like affirmed and everything and validated and valued.
Gotcha.
And so when I like wasn't showing up for all of those things when he needed me to show up, it created a lot of conflict because I didn't really understand why he was just so needy all the time. And I, again, was like much more
independent.
Yeah. Like I just, you know, I had the things I wanted to do. I had my friends and everything. And so I think there was just some like unmet expectations and unsaid needs that created a lot of conflict.
Right. Okay. Let me, can I see if I am seeing the picture? So I guess you're both meaning that you were expecting different things going in.
Yes.
And probably unspoken. Like you didn't say, hey, we're getting into this relationship. Just so you know, I'm an independent person as Onda. And so I'm not going to always tell you when I'm going to hang out with this person on a Friday night as opposed to you. And Brant, you were maybe unbeknownst to yourself, but you were sort of dealing with this identity issue of like, I was a swimmer. That's why I was here. And now I'm no longer a swimmer.
Yeah.
So what am I? Who am I? And maybe feeling a little down about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this new relationship is sort of filling that vacuum of identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, well, maybe this is who I am. And so I don't want to put, I'm trying on this picture. You can tell me where this is wrong or overstepping my bounds, you know, but it's like, this makes me feel good. This makes me feel like I have maybe purpose or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is starting to, you could use it to like assuage your insecurity a little bit. And so to you, did it feel a little bit like, give this to me as much as possible because this is the thing making me feel good?
Yeah. Although just not being super aware of that, like on a conscious level.
Right.
Not recognizing it for what it was.
I feel early on in my relationship with Katie, I think I fit that, what you're describing, Brant. And so to me, it feels like, well, that's, everyone would make that mistake, you know? it just feels like that's the normal thing. You're excited about a relationship. You think about it a lot. You want to spend time together. Of course, it would be on the needier side, you know? So to me, it's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so I'm curious to know, looking back, is the way that you conceive of that dynamic, like, oh, we were just different with equally good expectations, but just different expectations? Or were you like, oh, there was differing levels of health within our relationship? Do you think that Onda's posture and expectation was actually, yeah, you should probably be more like that if you are aiming for health? Or is Brant's more like, I want to be together more, you know, maybe we take away a little bit of that insecurity piece. Are they both equally okay postures? And again, I'm not asking you to speak for like all relationships forever, but as you look back on your story.
I think there was a happy medium in the middle of the two. Onda was a little more on the extreme side of, we almost couldn't sit next to each other in public because she thought that was communicating the wrong message to everybody else, and was so concerned about what other people were thinking about us and our relationship and how that was making them feel. And I wanted to always be holding her hand and sitting next to her and being more affectionate.
Huh, that's interesting. So on some level, you both were reacting to, what does this relationship say about me?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it, like Brant, what does this relationship say about me? Like, I want people to know. And maybe that's not, maybe I'm, again, I'm overstepping it, but like, it was something about being in a relationship that fed something for you of your worth.
Yeah.
And then Onda, it sounds like what I'm picking up is that there was something about the way you did the relationship that you wanted people to think about it in a certain way.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly right. I think I cared so much about the way that I was being perceived. And I think there's a few reasons for that. One of them being that in college life, I was in leadership roles. So I felt a lot of pressure of just feeling like I needed to be perceived in a certain way. I also think that there were some other examples of people who got together who I felt like were on the other extreme of like much more inappropriate when they were out in public and like overly, like uncomfortably affectionate, where it was distracting, you know, and
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
You know, and so I think like I was just very hyper aware of how we were being perceived. And also I think there's a piece of it too. Like, how does this relationship make me look? What are people going to think of me? And so it did become a little bit me focused. That's not to say that like you should go and like, you know, be all over each other in public by any means, you know, like you have to find what's right
please
for you
don't.
And yeah, please don't do that. Yeah.
Right.
But I think for me, it was the whole mindset of, yeah, I think what you said was exactly right. How are people going to perceive me in this relationship? A little bit more self-focused.
Which is interesting because Brant, do you think it's true that a lot of the reasons of why this difference was so difficult is because a lot of it was unspoken at the beginning? Because like, you know, if I'm putting myself in Brant's shoes, which is easy to do again, because I think I more fit that. If I were you, Brant, I could potentially perceive Onda's like, oh, I don't want to like hold hands in public as like, oh, you don't like me enough.
Rejection, yeah.
Hold my, yeah. Versus, oh, I actually, Onda, you're sort of communicating. Actually, it doesn't have anything to do with you, Brant. It has to do with like how we are perceived.
Yeah, and that's actually like a huge piece of what created a lot of, I mean, there's a couple of things, but that's one of them that created a lot of conflict of Brant not feeling like, I think rejection is a great word for it, you know, feeling like, oh, you didn't like want to hold my hand when we were here, like just feeling very rejected. And then me not understanding why he was feeling rejected. And then that creating a lot of conflict in the relationship.
Do you ever remember a moment when it became clear that like this was the dynamic that you were working with? And maybe not moment, but do you remember like the discovery of that? Because at some point you learned this as opposed to just like lived through it, you know?
I don't think I remember like a moment where I was like, oh, this is the dynamic that we should work through in my like 20s, you know? But I do remember a time where I don't even remember at what point in our relationship it was, but we were at a friend's apartment and there was a bunch of people there. It was probably for some college life event or I don't know, maybe a friend hangout or something. I don't remember, but there was a bunch of people there. And I was sort of towards the back of the apartment and I was talking with some friends and Brant walks in and I kind of see him from afar and wave. I don't go over to say hello. And we had a conversation after that where I remember him saying, you are so concerned about what everyone else is saying. He said, you didn't even come say hi to me. Yeah. And I think I remember that because I remember thinking that is a valid complaint, I guess. I don't know. Like I remember thinking like, okay, yeah, there is something that is going on deeper than just, I want other people to feel comfortable and okay, which is, you know, true. I did want that. And I do think that like, we did end up getting a lot of.
It sounded like we achieved that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No thanks to me.
And so I do think we worked through it enough where we were able to kind of find a balance, but it created a lot of conflict initially. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that kind of created some conflict was that Brant and I perceive the world differently sometimes, and that is a beautiful thing and also can create conflict. And so especially when we were first dating, Brant's reaction to things sometimes I felt like was much stronger than it needed to be.
Yeah. Which is true that it was much stronger than it needed to be. It was an overreaction.
And you're talking about regular, run-of-the-mill daily stuff. You're not talking about relationship stuff necessarily.
Like getting cut off in traffic.
I see.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
You would get upset. And I'm like, why do you feel like you need to yell right now? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. And so we would get in a lot of conflicts about that kind of stuff where I felt like his overreactions to things were unhealthy. And so we would argue a lot.
And then she would tell me that. And
sure, not. That felt great. I'm sure.
And then I would disagree.
He would disagree. And we would have a lot of arguments about those things. And I think, Peter, we were talking and you brought up a story that I did not remember at all, but it's like a great example of that. I don't know. Do you want to tell it?
Oh yeah, sure. I remember because, you know, Brant and I were roommates and I remember there was like a interfellowship worship night. And so there was like these like prayer walk groups that were organized to like go around the campus and pray over buildings and stuff like that. It was really cool. And I think the three of us were in a little prayer walk group and we were walking past the arc and like going toward campus. It's really like beautiful, like 100 feet where there's like it's trees and it's sort of a curved path, you know? And there was a biker that biked a little bit too close to our group. And Brant spoke strongly to the biker and told her that she was too close and what was she doing, and in a firm way. And then later on, when Brant and I were like doing pillow talk or whatever, he asked me like, Peter, did you think I like overreacted to that? And I felt sort of stuck because like I'm not a conflict guy usually. But I did feel like I overreacted a little bit. And then I think I paused, then you filled my silence, you said, because I think Anda kind of got mad at me and said that I was being too mean or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. You know, it just really stuck out to me. And I don't know if it was A, that you talked about it, B, that, you know, seemed like Brandt was sort of stewing over the fact that Anda had said that, but he was analyzing it too. He's like, was I wrong? Was I not wrong? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I asked you if you remember that and you did not. So
we did not remember that,
but it sounds totally accurate and in line with many other conversations, arguments we've had about things like that.
And I think one thing I'll say that kind of stuck out to me as you were telling that story, Pete, is that one thing that I appreciate about Brandt, one thing that I think ended up keeping us together despite a lot of the initial conflict, was the fact that like Brandt is very good at when you bring something to him, even if he gets a little bit upset about it initially. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, when we first started dating, the upset was a lot more and there was a lot of like emotional things that he, you know, kind of had to work through, and much less now. But he is very good at like taking that, chewing on it, and then coming back and kind of talking it out and acknowledging the things that he did. He is very humble in that way. Even if it's not initially, generally it always ends up being like that. So he's much more willing to like face conflict head on in that way. Whereas I definitely am more conflict avoidant, where I would just let it stew and just let it be and just whatever, like we'll get over
move
it.
Move on.
He's much more like, hey, we had this argument. Like, this is what I did. This is, I understand why you felt like that.
Ooh, that's a beautiful kind of line right there. It. I understand why you felt that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Because often the argument was because of something I said or did or that I felt like I was the instigator and so I needed to correct it.
He's very reflective, and I think that is such a gift. I think it's a gift, I think, just as an individual. I also think it has been a gift in our relationship and in our marriage itself. I tend to be the person that is like a quick reactor and like wants to talk things out right then. And if we don't, then like, I'm not going to bring it up anymore. It doesn't matter. Brandt is definitely the person that like takes something in, chews on it, even will sometimes just like write everything out and then come back and have just a very well thought out discussion. And I think that is a really amazing quality.
I don't understand those people, Anda.
I don't, but I appreciate them.
It just doesn't make sense to me. It's just like, have your thoughts. Have your thoughts now when you, in the moment.
No, it takes me a long time to get through my thoughts.
Yeah, it takes a little bit. And I think that was something I kind of had to learn.
Totally.
I had to learn that, not everybody can just think what they think right away. And perhaps it's wise to think about what you're thinking.
Perhaps.
You know, instead of just spewing it out. Perhaps that is why. So I feel like I've learned that a lot from him.
Hey, I have a question. This might be hard to answer, but you spoke, I just noticed a little bit of what you said. It's like Brandt's sort of overreactions are less now than they were at the beginning, so you're sort of speaking to like a trajectory of character. Like he has grown emotionally. Sorry to talk about you as if you're not in the room, Brandt. I know you're right there. But
it's okay.
But part of what's interesting to me about even talking about this whole conflict stuff is like sort of posing the question, like, why didn't it break you? Like, why didn't you break up from this conflict? And so I'm sort of curious to get to that, but maybe even to build that bridge. Did you see the growth of his character sort of from the beginning through dating and still through marriage? And then if you didn't, do you think you would have gotten married if you didn't see any growth in that particular element of him?
I did see growth for sure. I think growth in both of us. You know, when you start when you start dating young, I mean, you talked about this at the beginning, right? That there is a level of maturity that happens as you grow up, right? That's just kind of what we – or I hope there is. You know, I hope that that happens. And so, yeah, I think – through our relationship, I definitely, for both of us, saw a lot more maturity, got a lot more clear on what we wanted. I will say one thing that I think kept us together, we always had the same value. Like the whole relationship, even in the beginning unhealthy part, like our values very much aligned. We wanted the same things.
Like what? Can you ultimately get explicit about that? Like what would that
yeah,
mean?
Yeah. So we both very much wanted to serve in whatever way. Like we both had a heart for missions at the time and just service oriented. So we knew that like we wanted our life to look like that in some mm-hmm. form. And so that was huge. You know, we, when it's not COVID season, like have gone to Honduras many times together. Yeah. That's never an argument for us about like whether or not we should go.
Can I just really quickly, say that
yeah.
not only did you go to Honduras mm-hmm. a bunch of times, but you went on the back half of your honeymoon to Honduras, to the orphanage that you guys had built relationships with, which like often astounds me when it comes up in, but yeah, anyway, just to give the listeners yeah, and a, I think, a picture. Like, yeah.
That's yeah. and that's a great example. It's like that just was like, yeah, let's just do this. Like it was not an art, like even a really a discussion. It was like, hey, do you want to do this? Yeah, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And so I think like that value, I mean, you know, more traditional, like we both wanted children. I think when you kind of get down into the nitty gritty, I remember in college life, Bronwyn Lee, who's amazing.
Love her here. Yeah.
Bronwyn, if you're listening, I just has love been you on so the much.
Pod News staff.
Yep, has been on. Yep. And I remember her giving a talk where she was talking about how like sometimes in relationships with believers, there's sort of this like thought of, well, we're both believers. And so therefore like this could just work. And
should just work.
It should just work. And I remember her saying like, that's just not the mm-hmm. case. And I could not agree more. And that just kind of stuck with me of, you know, you could both love Jesus so much and I hope you mm-hmm. do. But if your values are not aligned, there's just going to be a lot more conflict mm-hmm. and it's going to be a lot more difficult. So I think even from the beginning, like we had very aligned values.
I'm hearing what you're saying and I'm sort of imagining the whole like the big rocks in the sand analogy where it's mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. if you fit in the big rocks first, then you have room for the little stuff, you know? So it's like those are the sure. big important things. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what you're saying is like, this particular brand of commitment to Jesus, which was sort of a given for both of you, really created a bedrock yeah. for your relationship, which then you could fit other stuff in around it. So it's like your actual personality fit wasn't even necessarily the most important thing. Is that what you're communicating?
Yes. I do think there is something to say about like a personality yeah. fit.
Right. I mean, that could also be aligned with like what you're desires are for like goals in life, like that could direct kind of what yeah. your desires are for and your goals in life. And
yeah,
mm-hmm. kind of getting back to what you're talking about originally with the growth, like I think that both of us grew up a lot in our relationship. Uh-huh. I think
yep.
we both had a lot of like emotional growing to do. We both really got clear about like what we actually wanted in our relationship and why, and like what was working mm-hmm. and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. And we actually, Brant actually wanted to get married a year into our dating relationship.
Yeah.
And I
brought it up a year into our dating
yeah, relationship. Yeah. And he like brought it up as like the possibility of getting engaged. And I wasn't just not ready. And mm-hmm. I communicated that to him. I didn't feel a peace about it. I didn't feel ready. And so we waited another year. And I do think there is something to say about giving yourself just some time
yeah.
to grow and mature. Not to say that, you know, I know tons of people that got engaged
sure.
early in their relationship and stuff. I just knew for us, we just weren't there yet.
Yeah.
And he was a little hurt by that initially, but even now I think he'll say it was a good choice.
Yeah. A little disappointed, I guess, but totally understood where she was coming from, and in looking back it was definitely much needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it allowed for having another four seasons of life together. It allows you to see a lot of the other person in a bunch of different circumstances and life situations. And during that time we were finishing up our senior year at college, and she was applying to a master's program for and teacher credential. And I was looking for a job, and there was just a lot of change happening. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our friend group was on their way out, as we talked about earlier, Davis just being a revolving door.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of that that allowed for seeing who the other person really was.
Yeah.
And how they responded to change.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. I think, I don't know if other people are interested in this, but I find myself in these conversations continuing to be interested in like the subjective experience of being quote unquote ready or quote unquote not ready. You know, and so Brant, it's, from what it sounds like from your story, Brant was communicating that he was ready. It sounds a little bit to me like you're saying that even though you were communicating that, maybe you weren't as ready as you thought you were.
Correct.
And then Onda, you were feeling like, oh, I don't feel ready. But then in a year, you felt ready. And so I'm like desperate to know like what happened in the meantime, other than what you're communicating of like just you saw more of each other, more time. And was it more time to get to know if this was the right person, or was it more time to make this big step and commitment? Was it still up in the air whether you're going to get married or not? I mean, obviously it was because you weren't married yet, but I'm really curious to know what happened in the year that, especially I think that made you Onda feel like now I'm ready, unless it was just something, nothing other than more time.
One thing I think we've talked about, but I think people need to know, is that Brant is the person who, when he gets into something, he's like in it, you know, if he's like, I'm interested in this, then we're like hours on the internet. Yeah. We're like buying all the tools. We are in it to win it. And that is just his personality.
Brant is also he's someone like, who, if he can't buy the tool, he'll just make the tool somehow.
He'll just make it. Yeah. He just, like, recently he bought, like, a bunch of old rusty tools. And he's like, I'm just going to, like, refurbish these. And I'm just going to, like, and I'm just going to sell them. And I'm like, these look like trash. It looks like something
you paid money
that
for
you would
trash.
Put in the garbage. I'm not even kidding. And then he comes in the other night.
She was very disappointed.
I was like, I can't believe you bought this. Like, this is garbage. You put this in the dumpster. And he comes in the other day with this, like, beautifully cleaned. He's into woodworking, so he's like very good at woodworking. Yeah. And so he like it was this beautiful planer.
I don't know about that. I'm getting there.
He's good at
better
it.
Better than you and me on it.
Like so much better, like times 300. 400, there's arbitrary numbers. Times so many numbers. he comes in, his planer's like beautiful. Like it looks brand new. And I'm like, who are you? And so he is just the person that like if he knows like I enjoy this, I like this, he's just all in. And so from the beginning of our relationship, he was like, I like this girl. I'm all in. And I was more like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, this is too much.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And so for me, I think I just needed some more time to figure out, is this what I really want?
And this being like the story
this,
of
this
marriage.
Relationship. Do I want to be married right now? I think there was some expectation on my part. I always thought, it's so funny. Like God has such different plans than we have ourselves. Yeah. But I always thought like my parents got married later in life. And so that was just kind of the example that I had. And so I always thought that I would get married in my 30s. Like I was expecting to graduate college and move somewhere and do like service projects and all of that stuff. And so when I was in this sort of more serious relationship, it was just the mix of expectation that I had for myself versus like what was actually happening in my life. And it scared me a little bit because I was like, well, this is just not what I was supposed to be doing. And I also think I have this like chronic like issue problem of feeling like, well, maybe there's something better. Uh-huh. Like maybe there's like a better person. Maybe there's like a better computer than this one that I have. Right. Like I should like research a bunch more, you know? And so like, I think that also kind of came into it a little bit too, where I very much love this person, but is this right? Like, am I too young? Like, there's just a lot of questioning and doubt that I felt like I kind of personally needed to wrestle with and get wisdom from, and you know, all of that. Because I did love like a year into our relationship, you kind of have a feel of do you love this person or do you not love this person? And so I think for me, there was just a lot of fear around this whole idea of getting married and committing your life to a person. Mm-hmm. When there's just so much life left to be lived. And so I just needed some time. Like I needed some time to process through, to graduate college, to, you know, to just be. And I'm not sure if everybody needs that necessarily, but I feel like I definitely needed yeah. that. And I maybe would recommend that.
Totally. Yeah, no, you can. It's your story. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend that.
I think what's really interesting is like you are describing an issue of like a vision of your life. Like you had a vision mm-hmm. of your life that was after college, you were going to spend some time being pretty independent, you know, and free right. to go to whatever thing was calling you, exciting, like go serve somewhere or do that interesting thing. And being married, mm-hmm. you were realizing, it seems like actually was not totally compatible with that vision of your life. And so for you, it was sort of like, well, what do I want my life to be? And I think right. what's really interesting is like, and I said it in our first episode, I think the failure mode of doing these conversations is that it communicates that you should always be wanting to get married and that getting married is the goal mm-hmm. and that getting married mm-hmm. is the way to win the race. And so, you know, yeah. even in my line of questioning, it could be heard as like, well, what took you so long to wake up and realize that you need to get married? right. You know, and like, so I feel like what I kind of want to say and what I'm realizing is like, there's a world in which you broke up at that moment where Brant said, I'm ready to get married. And Anda's like, I'm not, I have a different vision of my life, you know? And, yeah. and it's weird to say because, you know, I love you guys and can't imagine you not being married, but like, that's a legitimate story. It's a legitimate way for that story to go. If you sort of know, mm-hmm. like, I kind of want to have a different flexibility to serve the kingdom, you know, or even if it's not that noble.
Totally. And I actually agree with you. And we've talked about this is I do feel like while I love the church, I do feel as though there is sort of this kind of like unspoken and sometimes very clearly spoken expectation of, well, you just get married and that is like the ultimate thing.
That is the progression.
That is the progress, you know, and I do think that sometimes the church undervalues the beauty of singleness. And I do feel like just talking to some of my single friends, how oftentimes they feel very on the margins because they are not married. And that is something that I think gets undervalued. Yeah. And again, don't hear me saying that I, you know, don't love the church. I do. I just think that that's something that as a body that we really can be working on, just valuing all people, whether they're married or not. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think you're totally right that there was sort of this piece of me that had this different expectation. It's so interesting to me now because I can't even imagine right. not being married to Brant. I think God very much did a work there. We just have had to walk through a lot of things where I just don't even know yeah. what it would even have looked like to not walk through those things together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, while my expectation might have been different than the reality, yeah. God totally blessed that. And I think part of that also is like, at some point you just have to make a choice, mm-hmm. you know, like at some point you just have to choose yeah. whether or not you want to marry that yeah. person, you know? And I think there's something to say about making sure that you're getting wisdom from other people. One thing that we did before we even got engaged, we sought wisdom from other married couples that we loved and respected, the Gibsons being one of those mm-hmm. couples that we asked, like, hey, can we come over and can we have a conversation? We would love to hear your input about whether or not you think that this is a good idea. What do you see in us as couples, just as a more objective third party? And we sought out wisdom from other married couples that we respect and who knew yeah. us. And so, you know, there is, I think,
they knew us as a couple,
knew us as a right. couple, knew us as individuals before we got together, like mm-hmm. all of those things. I think that's super, super mm-hmm. important. And, you know, being in community as a couple is super important as well. I mm-hmm. think that's one thing I remember Stanford Gibson saying to us is he said, you know, sometimes when people get together, they
recede from
yeah.
the public.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And then we just don't see them as much anymore. And they kind of become their own little bubble and they stop going to hang out with friends as much and they stop coming to college life as yeah. much and they stop. And he was like, you know, one thing that I appreciate about your relationship is that you guys were very much still out with your friends, still very much a part of college life. And I do think that there is such importance in being in community. So seeking wisdom from people who know you and mm-hmm. love you, and then also being in the community and letting the community be a part of your relationship as well and seeing how your partner interacts in that community. I just think that there's like so much yeah. there. Yeah. And so, but at some point, like kind of coming back to it, at some point you have to make a decision. And Pete, we kind of were talking about this whole idea of like want, like at some point you have to decide, like, is this what you want, you know, and is this a choice that you're going to make?
And it's going to a choice that you have to make every single day thereafter,
right?
That love is not just a feeling that you have, because there's sometimes where your feeling towards the other person is not of affection, but that you still love that person and want to do the best that you can for them.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like, as we were all talking, Peter, that you brought up, like, can you remember like a specific argument or and we just can't, you know, like it's so difficult. And that's because I really think it's because we just made the choice. We're like, okay, like this is the person I want to be with. We're going to get married. We're going to do life together. We're going to keep choosing. We're going to keep moving forward. And so like all of that other stuff just sort of was like, it just doesn't matter anymore, you know, because what matters is here and now in this relationship. So,
you know, Bronwyn, 2 years ago, I think we were doing a series on the will of God, and she was talking about the importance of our desires in trying to discern what the will of God is. And she sort of painted this picture of like, we are allowed and encouraged to feel strongly what we want and to want what we want. I think sometimes we get this idea of if God's will is perfect and mine is imperfect, then what I want is often wrong, you know? And so I should forget about what I want and try to figure out what God wants for me. And Bronwyn was sort of making the point like, no, like God is, like, wants to partner with you in this, and he and your desire, he wants to form your desires is what he wants. He wants you to want the right things. And so sort of a posture we should take is to want strongly, but then to present that open-handedly to God and say, I want this. You know that I want this. So I am presenting it to you. And, you know, again, sort of maybe the classic, like he might over time change what you desire if you're sort of submitting to him, and or might just grant it, right? And so I think I'm fascinated by this issue of desire. Like I said on the last episode, I've said before, but like I just feel like I wanted to marry Katie, you know, and I don't really think I entertained the idea of not marrying Katie once sort of we got a little bit into the relationship. And there's part of me that feels really irresponsible about that, because it's like, was I being wise? But another part of me was like, well, I wanted it. And it never got to the point where, yeah, someone who was looking at the relationship said like, this is bad. You know, like it seems to me like your desires are twisted. You know, you are saying you want this, but I can't see why it's good for you, you know? And so I just felt sort of free to continue wanting it. And I think a question that I have for you, Anda, is, and maybe we can sort of wrap up here, because I'm still interested in like the question of like, why didn't you break up? And I'm just wondering this, it sort of crystallized for me. So like you having this sort of other vision of your life, and a good one, could be a good one. Did you feel like the experience, was it feeling like you were capitulating to an idea of being married? Like you were walking down this road of like, yeah, I know I ought to get married. So like, I'm going to try to want this. Or did it just start to feel like you started to naturally want it more?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think at some point, it really did just feel like the natural next step. Not like a forced next step. Not to say that there wasn't any doubt. I think any big decision, there's always going to be a little bit of doubt. Like if we're being honest. But it just really did feel like I have so much peace about this. It just feels like the natural next step. And I think a kind of a different example, but I think one that's applicable here is when I was deciding which grad school to go to, I decided to be between two schools, UC Davis and one other school. And I remember talking to a friend of mine, Rachel Johnson, who's amazing. And she, I remember like kind of going back and forth with her about like, I just don't know what choice to make. Like I feel so stuck. And she was like, you know, it seems like both of these choices are great choices. Yeah. And whatever you decide, God's going to bless you in that decision. And so that stuck with me, because I think even now I think about that, because you're right. I think God does want us to ask what we want. Like how many times in the Bible is God like, what do you want? What do you want? You know, asking us what we want. And so I think God wants us to tell him what we want. But also, like, if you have these two great choices, I think God's going to bless the choice to make if it's wise, you know?
Yeah. So you didn't feel like you were capitulating to an idea of I have to get married, you felt like the actual desire started to brew with more time.
It did. And it really did sort of just, again, feel like that natural next step. I don't know if you felt the same.
I mean, it got to the point where thinking about trying to spend life without Onda seemed almost unbearable.
I remember you saying that we were like doing dishes and you were just like, I just don't want to live life without Onda. I remember that very clearly.
Yeah. She brings so much joy and optimism and happiness and kind of balances me out well that I don't think I'm going to find anybody better. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to ever be without her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my personal journey in this whole project is like figuring out what my thoughts are on this idea of sort of like, you know, if someone comes to me and is wondering about their relationship, the question I want to ask is like, well, what do you want? Mm-hmm. Yes, I hear you saying that, oh yeah, this might not be great. This might not be great. And I feel like I want to say, well, what are you wanting to happen? Are you wanting mm-hmm. to break up? You know, are you wanting mm-hmm. for this to keep going?
And I think if you're doubting your relationship, I think it's important to be asking the right mm-hmm. questions. You know, like, not that this is the right question, but just thinking about like, what's a red flag versus like a pink flag?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, so if you're coming to somebody that you love and respect and you're wanting advice about your relationship and whether or not it's a good choice, like, what questions are you asking? Mm-hmm. Because if you're asking, how do you see me with this person versus myself individually? Like, are you seeing that God's still using me? And are you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of making up questions on the fly. But what questions are you actually asking? Mm-hmm. Are they more like self-focused, like for myself, like where I was like, what do people think of me? Like, what, you know what I mean? And that's just not the question that I needed to be asking. And so when you're seeking wisdom, think about, okay, what am I actually asking? What's the intention behind that question?
Or the questions that you're asking sort of trying to lead to an out. Are your questions trying to get the other person to affirm your underlying belief that you should break up with this person or
which again I think like shows to me like okay what it sounds like what you want is to not be in this relationship and you know what? You're allowed to want that mm-hmm. you know and that's a legitimate thing mm-hmm. you know there's part of me that feels like people hear your story they could be like okay well that just means you should never break up you know it's like okay these people are describing having conflict being sort of different in personalities so I guess it's like there's just no reason to break up ever you know but I'm not hearing you say it. I'm hearing you describe a fundamental similarity and congruence in what you value. I'm hearing you saying that you learned how to deal with conflict. I'm hearing you saying that you were patient mm-hmm. and knew that there was a desire to stay together, but still being patient, working through, you know, for Onda, it sounds like, is this the vision of my life that I want? And it sounds like Brant, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to put too many words in your mouth, but learning how to be whole and not mm. using this relationship as just a way to tell yourself that you're okay, but actually seeing, actually, I just love Onda, you know, and want to be with Onda, mm. not necessarily regardless of what that says about me, but just because I want to be with her, you know, and a lot of that took time, you know? And so the question is, well, is there ever a moment where it's like, I don't want to give this any more time. Like, I just think this should be over. Maybe, sure. But that wasn't your experience. You know, your experience wasn't like, I really wish we weren't dating anymore. But I guess just with more time, mm-hmm. maybe it'll work out. It sounds like you wanted to be dating and still had some things to work through. Does that sound accurate to your story as I bastardize it in my retelling?
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit on it earlier when you were like, you know, if these issues that you saw at the beginning as you were still, you know, growing and maturing mm-hmm. and coming out of sort of this identity crisis and like insecurity crisis for both of you, like if you didn't see growth in that, would you stay together? And the answer is no, you know, like, no, we wouldn't. But we did. Like, we did see growth mm-hmm. in both of us. We learned mm-hmm. so much from each other, but also from wise counsel outside of our relationship. Yeah. And so that, I think, is a huge piece for us. And then, you know, we have fun together. Like, we have fun mm-hmm. together. We laugh a lot. Like, Brant thinks everything's funny, which makes me feel super cool. You know, like.
And Andres, you're funny. You're a funny person. You're both funny people.
Anna is funny.
Thanks. But, you know, I think we are very different. But like Brant said, like our differences really complement each other. And it works super well together. So if we continue to see the unhealthy piece, no, we would not have stayed together. but there was so much growth because of conversations, but also counsel outside. So.
Yeah. Brant, any last words?
Be looking to grow. If you're looking to just stay the same as you are, marriage is not for you. Marriage will bring out, marriage is hard. It is not a solution to anything. It is not meant to replace your relationship with God. You're not supposed to put this other person on a pedestal and expect them to fulfill you. Yeah. They are there to walk alongside you and
partner.
Be a partner with you in life, but it's not a solution to anything. And if you think it's a solution to something, you will be gravely disappointed.
Yeah.
Because that's not what marriage was intended to be. And so making sure that you are thinking long and hard about it, and again, being involved in a multi-generational community so that you are friends with people your age, but you're also friends and acquaintances with people who are older and wiser than you, who see you and see you interact with other people and can then have something to base an opinion on and speak into your life about. Because if you're not present in front of other people, then what are they going to say? They don't have any information to base their opinion off of. They don't have their own observations to provide input on. And so you could love and respect somebody, but they just don't know you and
can't offer you wisdom. Kind of
their opinion should then, and wisdom that they have, while still probably valid, it doesn't have a full picture of what you're asking them to talk about you and your relationship.
Yeah, that's great, man. I love it. And I think that's a good place to wrap up this part of the conversation. Of course, we, being the wise sages that we are, have to offer other people wisdom on what to do with their lives during quarantine. So we are going to transition to Quarantine Corner, America's favorite segment. And can you guys go first, Quarantine Corner? Give people something to do during quarantine.
Okay, we have discovered this.
Archaeologists.
I know. It is like the internet archaeologist. Is that a thing?
Sure. No.
But actually, it was because of my sister-in-law. If you are into food, which
we all are, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Let's be honest. Who is in good into good food? Everyone. There is a blog called Half Baked Harvest with the absolute most delicious,
so good
food. Maybe on the planet Earth. I don't know. I know. And
that's a bold statement.
Okay, maybe that's a bold statement. However,
it all started
when I was with my sister-in-law, who made the most delicious pizza I've ever had. And I was like, where did this come from? And she showed me this cookbook that she has from Half Baked Harvest, which is also a blog. Yeah. So we have been like making things through this blog website. And we decided that on Christmas, since Christmas looked a little different for us this year because we were, you know, alone with each other. And so we decided that we were going to make all of our Christmas meals via
Half-Baked Harvest recipes. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we discovered this recipe for brie stuffed sourdough loaf.
That can't be bad.
Is that how you say it?
Impossible.
A sourdough loaf stuffed with
brie.
Yeah. I think it would be a more appropriate way of saying it.
That's going to be so great. And so I went to the co-op here in Sacramento to get like a sourdough loaf. And they did not have any plain sourdough loaves. They only had a lemon rosemary sourdough loaf. And I was like, dang it. But that's the only thing they had, so we got it. Okay, we stuffed this rosemary lemon sourdough loaf with this brie, and it also gets like this pecan brown sugar.
Just a light sprinkling of it with
cranberries
on top.
And I was like, this could be great or it could be terrible because it is not like a normal sourdough loaf. Oh my gosh.
It was so good.
It was the best thing we have eaten in 2020.
Really?
And what a rookie mistake to think that a plain sourdough loaf would have been better than this lemon thyme sourdough loaf. So I guess this is like a quarantine corner for two products.
Yeah, totally.
If you're ever in the co-op in Sacramento, you need to get the lemon rosemary sourdough loaf. It's going to change your life.
So good.
And then you need to look up
this half-baked harvest.
Half-baked harvest. Brie stuffed.
I love it.
It is so good.
I love that you guys have, I think, since you've been married, like you always do like a charcuterie dinner, like at least once a week.
Oh, yeah. It has upped our charcuterie game by 3,000.
You've always done that, right? You've always done a charcuterie dinner like once a week.
We do. Most of the time. We're doing a clean eating January, so we're not doing it right now. But we generally on Sunday nights, our Sunday night dinner is usually like the baguette from Costco, you guys, which is also really delicious. Yeah. Costco baguette, some brie, some goat cheese, and some fruit, and sometimes popcorn. And that's our dinner on Sunday night.
Delightful. So. That's delightful.
It is.
That sounds great. Okay, my quarantine corner, you could have yours while doing mine. So I fully admit that mine is not cool. But I'm just going to talk about it because you'll be the judge of that. So one of the most boring things to listen to someone talk about, two are really boring. One is when someone tries to explain the rules of a game to you without the pieces. You know, they're like, oh, first you deal out 7 cards and then you it's a game where, you know, it's like
this theoretical.
Yeah, I literally can't listen to it. My brain shuts off when I listen to it. And I think that what I'm about to say is like the other side of that. When people talk about their fantasy sports teams, it's the dullest content that someone could imagine. But when you have one, you care so much about it, you know? And so my quarantine corner is just unashamedly fantasy sports. Gosh. So football season just ended. I'm really bad at that. But then the fantasy basketball season just started. And I will admit that if fantasy football is chess, fantasy basketball is checkers. There's just like really no strategy to it. You just put people in and let them go, you know? But it's so fun. And so last week, I'm just going to tell you this, and it's not going to be exciting. You don't have to pretend to be interested, but I need to tell the world about it. Okay, so the way it works is that you are playing someone for the week. So I was playing Natalie Gracia, and she scored, or I will say I scored the second most points in all the league. So of all the 10 teams, I was the second best the first week. And Natalie just happened to be the first best. So I lost to the best person under any circumstances. If you're the second best person in the league for any given week, you're like, I'm going to win. I just happen to be playing the first best, okay? So that's preamble. Then this last week, I was playing Jesse Alquist. And for the whole week, him and I were the first and second best freaking teams in the league again, okay? And so I was like, am I going to really be the second best team in the league for 2 weeks in a row? This is devastating. I've scored the most points in the whole freaking league, and I'm gonna be 0-2. This is an outrage.
So unfair.
So it was. I ended up. Steph Curry had a game. He's on my team. He had a game where he scored 62 points, and so he scored 77 fantasy points. So I ended up on top, and so sorry to Jesse who scored. He was the second best, and he got the L. But here's what I want to say. One, it was delightful to just follow the sport. You're invested in it in a way that probably unhealthy, but when it goes well, it's like gambling probably. When it goes well, it's like, this is just put it in my veins, you know?
Amazing.
And, but then I also got to chat with Jesse all week. Him and I were roasting each other. We were checking in on each other. So it produced community. And so that's what's fun. The thing that about it is like, you can't join. It'd be sort of useless to join. So I'm not even necessarily recommending that you do fantasy sports. But what I'm recommending is that for anyone that you know who likes sports, and if you're stuck in a conversation with them, just ask them how their fantasy team's doing. You don't even have to know what season it is. Just say, hey, how's your fantasy?
That's genius. how you would show love to somebody. Is to ask them how their fantasy. Congrats on your win. Can we show love to you that way? That's huge. Congrats on your win.
Appreciate it.
You are the winner.
But because we all, if you're into fantasy sports, we care more than we know people are interested. So if you said these words, like, "Hey, tell me about your fantasy team. I really want to know." People will—they'll just love you. They'll a green light to talk about something that you have a million thoughts on, and it's so irrational that you have all these passionate thoughts and, you know, all these like weird number things that feel so important to you and that are not interesting to hear about. But if you just make yourself available and say, "Hey, I want to hear about your fantasy team. Tell me about it." You just made a friend. You made someone's day. Yeah.
I hear that's the same way with parents and children as well.
Yeah.
Like if you ask somebody about their child.
That's probably true.
That they also.
That's probably true. Yeah. Because nobody's really interested in like what did they eat today. But that's like super exciting to talk about.
You're like, it is very exciting. Like you all need to know. It's super important.
Anyway, that's it for us. Brant and Anda, what a delight. Thank you for being here. Love you both.
We love you so much. Thank you so much for having us.
It was
such an honor, and we're just grateful for you and for the work you're doing and for College Life and for everyone who listens.
That's kind. That's very, very kind. You're too good to me. All right, that is it. But hey, one more thing about Brant and Nanda that I wanted to share, because it's one reason I asked them to be on in the first place. And one reason I wanted them to be speaking to our community is this sort of nebulous reality that they've like been through stuff. You know, they've faced more challenges than many other couples I've known in their time together. And we don't have to get into all the stuff that they have faced for that to matter. But, you know, they are a living, breathing example of my hope for the lives of the people of our students once they leave College Life, married or not married. Like, I hope that we are creating people who will be lifelong believers and that they would be committed to Jesus for a lifetime, complete and equipped is what we say, right? And one of my biggest fears is like, well, what happens when it really hits the fan in your lives? Like, will you still be clinging to Jesus? And perhaps what I appreciate most about Brant and Nanda is that in many ways, they've had to ask that question and they've remained committed. They are still following Jesus, and I love them for that. And they are, in many ways, my prayer for the people in this community. So thank you, Brant Nanda. Thank you, Robinsons, for your time and your story. And thank you, as always, to Josh Paskey and Kyle Jung for the music of your pod and your staff. We are going back to some oldies but goodies. And thank you to Mike Loretto for your editing prowess and for dealing with having to hear my voice in your ear for hours each week. And again, if you're interested in Mike's editing or, again, his spiritual coaching, visit his website, MikeLorettoCoaching.com. It'll be in the episode notes. And to close, College Life, boy, we love you even more than the ecstasy of watching Stephen Curry score 62 points to silence all the haters. We'll see you next week.